Sometimes at night I lay in my bed and I rest my tired mind from the day's contradictions I see. And then the pictures of my friends come in a collage, ever-changing foundations where lay in for a new kind of community. We won't put up seeing sisters dissipate. If we must, we'll pull out now, won't hesitate. With women's minds and woman love, we will create a culture where no man would think to kill or rape. And so my tired mind from the day's contradictions I see. And then the pictures of my friends come in a collage, ever-changing foundations where lay in for a new kind of community. Up from under come out one by one. The surfacing of woman's wisdom has begun. We must deny the right of man to use his gun, or rape the earth, or dare control the woman. My tired mind from the day's contradictions I see. And then the pictures of my friends come in a collage, ever-changing foundations where lay in for a new kind of community. And then the pictures of our friends come in a collage, ever-changing foundations we're laying for a new kind of community.
WBAI New York.
Many things are being done here in New York to save a woman's place. For more information, or if you just want to go up and visit, you can write to me, Irene Yarrow, at WBAI, 359 East 62nd Street, New York, New York, 10021, and I'll send you whatever information I have. Or you can contact A Woman's Place directly at Athol, A-T-H-O-L, New York, 12810. Phone number 518-623-9541. The poetry was by Erica Silver and the songs by Ruth Pelham. Thank you for listening.
Liz Sutherland and I are talking with Kate Millett about her new book, Sita, which was just published on May 26th. I guess the first thing I want to know, Kate, just because this is always confusing with that kind of real personal writing, it's described as an autobiographical novel. If we talk about the protagonist in the book, that Kate Millett. Are we talking about you?
Yeah, that's me. I didn't know where it was called an autobiographical novel. Maybe you should just say autobiography. We don't have a word yet for this kind of writing. So we think of all these crazy in-between things for a new genre.
In the book, you describe it as a journal you were keeping. Is that accurate?
I suppose it's as close to the novel as it is to a journal, in that it does all the things you associate with novels. It has characters and dialogue and scenes and action and narrative line, and probably closer to the drama than the journal is. See, the novel comes out of the drama, or was much influenced by it. And journals tend to be more, today I did this, today I did that, today I did the other, without the necessity of building plot line, mm-hmm. or a general tension or crisis or overall pattern and structure. So, and it does, in fact, have all those things, so it is a bit closer to a novel.
How would you describe the plot line in Sita?
A wavering line on a graph that refuses to be the same plot line as A Woman Destroyed, which plummets to its inevitable end. And in Sita, there seems to be a respite, sort of two-thirds of the way through the book. It's going to be all right again. And then the kill is very sudden at the end. That is by which I refer to the moment of my absolute dismissal and the real final end of the affair.
The reviews tended to dismiss it as as
wow, too, the reviews did more yeah. than that.
Well, but they, at least the ones I read, where they attacked it was on the grounds of its being that personal.
Mm-hmm. But behind that, and the review I guess we both have in mind, is that really malicious piece that was in the Sunday paper.
Also the one in The Voice I was thinking of.
The animus behind the one in the Sunday Times, though, is sort of, well, this is so familiar to me because I've been through it with Flying, too. I mean, it starts out, we don't want to know about this kind of stuff. This is icky, this is pukey, this is your life, it's disgusting. Behind it, there's another, the real animus, and that is, these are queers, and they aren't appreciable people. The women on Sunday, and it's, you know, sad they go get a woman to do this, but that's how it works. She said that, you know, lesbian sexuality was, as sort of as negligible as walking in on children playing doctor.
Yeah.
I mean, that gives it all away. When the attack on Flying came out, it was called confessional writing. And then it was called pornography, and you figured out how that algebra problem works. And that is that you're confessing to a sin, and the sin is being queer, and that's why it's dirty. And pornographic, in turn. I think that there's so much bigotry behind this, against lesbianism and against mm-hmm. homosexuals. That's the main animus. But there is, and of course they put this up front, but it's there too. And that is that there's a feeling that our lives really are loathsome, and that real, actual experience is beneath the scope of literature or humane consideration, that there's something shameful and shocking and private about it. So that you really shouldn't be written about, you know. And I think behind all that, quote, privacy is the notion that our essential intimate lives are shameful. And I think that just increases our alienation and isolation, particularly for homosexuals, or, and Sita's about the experience of the end of a love affair. People are horribly isolated, alienated from all their fellows at such a time anyway. Our society has no place for that particular kind of grief. You're supposed to go and get therapized or something like that.
Yeah. Or a new lover. What do you think the value in it is? I mean, what is the value in your sharing that experience?
Well, I'm an artist, and I do it whether I thought there was any value in it or not, matter of fact. It's a subject matter that I choose to use. It's what I know the most about and what I can say and describe the best. But I think it's very easy to make a case for its value. Women are dying of curiosity to know what the lives of other women are like. People, in fact, are. so that by this kind of self-exploration, we make a kind of almost an explosion happen that is our own coming to consciousness in this time and age.
I guess it's what I've always done in radio. Is gotten women's lives out where they could be heard. Yeah. In all of CETA and most of flying, what you're focusing on, what you were focusing on, is your intimate relationships. And the thing that was...
Well, I don't know. It certainly was in CETA. Flying was about everything. It was about being an artist. It was about being a graduate student. What people noticed was when it was about being a lesbian. Which is funny. But CETA certainly is focused on that.
Reading CETA, the intensity and the exclusivity of the focus in it, and I suppose also the intensity of the pain, made it hard to see you at Kate Millett as a woman who has done as much as you have in moving and shaping a whole piece of history, that you're describing yourself in such a passive place. And I guess I felt there was a real conflict between that place and knowing that you are someone who has been assertive and active with your life. That's almost dismissed in the book.
There are all the time activists, you know, are aware of these ambivalences and dichotomies, conflicts, contradictions, and so on in their life. CETA's a very obsessive book. It's a lover losing her lover and obsessed with nothing else, really.
Yeah.
To the exclusion of all else, literary conversations, nothing else really ever happens. That's how it is when you're in that position, too. I think people in that position are absolutely obsessed and have very little time to really take in anything. At least they might be able to, quote, function, but those things would not matter at the level that this disaster is mattering to them at the time. So that it does have that terrific and maniacal focus, but that's the focus of the experience. And what I wanted to do in this book was to record the process of that experience of losing a lover. There really isn't any other book about this. We don't even have books that describe divorces in any detail, and here it is, the major trauma of most people's lives. Till recently there was even no sociological literature, and what there is still very paltry. So it's a thing that we go through all by ourselves. And after a few friends, you know, have heard a little bit of it, that's about all the help you ever get. And that isn't much.
Yeah.
I suspect that the reason, aside from the issue of lesbianism, the reason that the book has drawn such hostile reactions is because that you don't seem to... You make it impossible for the reader to put any distance.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Between the personal and the political.
Yeah.
I mean, I found it a very painful book to read, and I confess that I didn't finish it.
And I'm not that self-conscious person, Kate Millett, all the way through flying. I'm just, you know, almost an anonymous persona. Anybody in this predicament. And yes, it is, I think, impossible to back away from it. And it's an outrageous book, you know. They're furious this time. They were furious with flying. They were furious with sexual politics. I like to make them mad. People react very differently because people have been through in this place, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, hardly anybody hasn't gone through this. The horrors and trauma of watching themselves lose somebody and loving somebody who won't love them back and did once, doesn't anymore. I felt if I could record that process that has never been recorded, maybe it might make it easier and so on and so forth, but really I only wanted to do it, you know, as an artist to catch something. And it also alleviated my wretchedness while I was going through it.
For sure.
That conflict, I guess, that what you said, ambivalence, I think, and what I feel is a really strong conflict. And I've been through it too,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I always feel a conflict between my politics in what's going on when I get reduced to that obsessive anonymity.
Ego's reduced to a little fly in the wall, yeah.
And we're all, I think, working, making the world won't be that easily reduced.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's safe to say that very few men get shattered that way, the way that women do. And it's hard for me all the time to reconcile, when it happens to me, to reconcile my own view of what I'm supposed to be, what I want to be working for
mm-hmm.
in my life. And...
Well, I was in that classic position where, you know, you're kind of being shoved down the birth canal from... now into next, and you resist as hard as you can because you want it to go back to then, and won't. And if it went back to then, you'd smother too, and I'm just as aware of that all the way through the book, that I could never develop as a sculptor, for example, within this relationship. And it's charming and ironic that I just did a big show in California, but in L.A. and not in the Bay Area. And... where I wanted to be, what I needed in terms of a loft and all the rest of it, and what I felt I needed in New York and the art world here, I could not have if I was living in that marvelous mm-hmm. little nest. But I was sort of, you know, resisting being born. I did not know yet that I was free, which is the sort of probably the last real line of the book and the last page and a half are sort of a coda of appreciation for the experience that affair had meant.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I remember once someone I was terribly, terribly in love with had been in the process of severing the relationship, and I was in the process of clinging to it. And finally we had one final encounter at her house, and I left, you know, and I went down in the elevator, and I was walking up 6th Avenue in the Village, and I just stopped dead, and I said to myself, that's a very jaunty step there for someone who just had her heart broken, because there was an enormous weight
mm-hmm. yeah,
lifted off me.
I never really entered my independence till after the last pages of that book.
Mm-hmm.
But, you see, what I also validate in that book is a tragic sense of love. So you don't just go get another shrink or another lover or some other, you know, new American pill so that you don't feel hurt or anything like that. There's something, you know, inevitable about this death of love, something terrible. And cheering yourself up and avoiding going through it. That was something I didn't want to do either. I did want to, it had to finish rather than get sort of curtailed or aspirined away or something like that.
When you say inevitable, I keep going back to the literature, the patriarchal literature that you described in sexual politics
mm-hmm.
that has shaped us in a lot of ways. I mean, you know, I grew up reading that stuff. I got my mm-hmm. sense of myself
mm-hmm.
out of it, and I've had five yeah. or 7 years now to try and get a different sense of myself. And I have been hoping and dreaming that kind of thing is not inevitable.
Well, patriarchal literature is one thing, but what I meant is that there is perhaps, you know, some indissoluble thing at the bottom that's, you know, that he used to have all those ponderous names for. I think that what I had in mind was not the patriarchal literature that I examined, none of which really cared very much of a hoot about love, let alone any tragic view of it. But I suppose that the models that I sort of had in view, you know, you always have them hidden, sort of, but somewhere you have them in your mind, would be more Proust, or especially Colette, Shelley, and the Fin de Shelley.
I guess, you know, I guess what I meant was that I hope that someday my ego will be, I have hoped that someday it will be in a place where it can't get that tied up whether another person loves me or not.
Not in that particular bind. I'm sure I will find lots of other ones, but not in that particular bind. But it's a place I had to be in to go through. It's a place I had to express. I spent a lot of time analyzing things, you know, too. And it seems to me there's a stage beyond the analysis, that there's some sort of final exorcism, perhaps, in expression.
Yeah, I just wondered whether you really thought we were all doomed always to that kind of experience as a part of our love lives.
By no means.
Because I have hoped not. I have hoped never to be the subject or object of that kind of obsession. It isn't a hell of a lot.
Sickness, if you like, and I,
but it's
it.
Yeah, it's all of ours. It's all of ours. I just, and I think examining it is probably one of the things we have to do.
For each other, we're probably getting a lot of hot water, because you know, it's very easy to make out a case for this being a very reactionary book.
For sure.
It offends on the one hand for being avant-garde and expressing too much truth, and on the other hand, it's politically incorrect. Doesn't have the right line.
Yeah, I think.
That's what
it's about.
I
how we live, in other words.
That's what I meant before about my comment about being unable to separate from the personal experience and the book, because that's definitely what it does do. You know, it's obvious that Kate has just been sucked into this whirlwind and is absolutely powerless to do anything. And politically, that's of course a wrong line to take. And you can expect to be trashed not only by the establishment media but also by the so-called feminist media, because in the same way that Myrna Lamb was trashed for apple pie, for the same reasons, because the protagonist in her opera was a woman who did not survive through a whole lifetime of being operated on by the patriarchy, and she was roundly criticized and condemned by everyone.
Well, I'm sure that, you know, I would get all that and a sort of punitive treatment, you know, the actual people who read it, especially gay women, see in it their own experience. And not only them, a lot of men people, too, that I've talked to, who, for them, it's about how hard it was for them when their old lady or somebody left them. Two and a gay guys read it, and it was about their lives, which I thought, this is remarkable, you know. I think I managed to capture something of that experience, of what it's going, what it's like going through that, you know. And on a scale that hadn't been done before, with that observation, it's a very painful subject. People are really nervous and embarrassed about all this, and No wonder they don't talk about it or write about it. So it has a certain kind of taboo quality.
You stay clear of analyzing it. I mean, you were just writing down what the experience...
Oh, I know all along what's wrong with it, and I say so all the time. That's kind of irrelevant to the fact that I'm in it.
Yeah, it feels that way when you are.
Mm. And it's easy enough for anybody watching to see that,
you know.
You hardly need footnotes to outline the path, I think. It all leads to this, kind of understanding in the last line that I hardly knew yet I was free. And to another understanding in the page and a half which summarized all that was magnificent and marvelous about this person for me. This sort of coda which is kind of a little... hymn almost, the people you've loved make up sort of all the rings on your tree, and they're the people you've learned from. And it almost doesn't matter after a certain point. Oh, you know, how it was at the end, or how they treated you every single time, or whatever. There's a way in which they were magnificent to know, and they were one of the best things that ever happened to you, even as a learning experience. I learned a lot about how to live from this person. I suppose that's why we love people. Anyway, they teach us things we didn't know before.
Yeah. Different parts of ourselves that we didn't have access to. I guess part of what I want to know is, hardly knowing yet that you were free, and you feel free now, I assume, from that. I guess just from the length
that's
of time.
Very good. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. When that curtain came down, how did you start getting back some different sense of yourself?
Oh, I took my notebooks and began typing them up. That's how I always manage to come through anything, is by working. And I had already made the beginnings of this recovery by doing the notebooks. So the notebooks were the grand foundation of the book. They're about 50% of the words and the pages and the volume of the book. But they were oblique a lot of times. There were whole lacuna and empty spots, and whole weekends that didn't get filled in, some stuff that I was too close to or didn't want to write about, felt I was bored by, but actually was pained by. That the telephone call came in May, ending it all, and that whole summer I stayed home on the Bowery and typed. And by fall, I had made a first draft. I have a great concern with women as victims, women victimized and so forth, and in a society that victimizes women, to see it from numbers of different angles.
Yeah.
Mostly in order to cease that victimization and so on and so forth. I don't think CETA is necessarily dedicated to that as to a premise. You know, I mean, CETA is not a hurry-up, go out there and, you know, man the barricades book. It's music, and that's really what I wanted it to be. Maybe someday that would be apparent after the yelling and screaming and the annoyance. But I did want to write a very musical and very romantic book in praise of love, in praise even of its melancholy and possible futility and so on and so forth. I mean, flying, it's about lifestyle in a way. If it espouses anything, it's a freer lifestyle and so on. There is no sense of tremendous conflict that sexual politics does. I mean, which is a sort of a book that enters battle.
I guess it seemed to me that both flying and Sita were accounts of... They don't enter battle.
Yeah.
But
their life behind the lines, maybe.
Yeah.
How it is for us and so on.
Yeah. In an invaded nation.
Right, yeah. Peaceful days. Or more peaceful days.
They're not very peaceful books, either of them.
I guess not.
When you said that you saw that concern with women's victimization as a step toward ending it, you said that, didn't you? Toward ending that victimization.
Well, you have to state it first, too.
Yeah. I guess what the question I'm asking is one that haunts me, too, because I've had a real deep commitment to consciousness raising, to the process of getting women's experience out. And I'm not sure myself of the answer to after consciousness raising, what? And I wondered if you had any sense of what next after we get the data out there. After we do record finally what our lives really are like, our stories, after, you know, however many millennia of hearing other versions, their versions of our stories, and now for these, what, 5 or 7 years trying real hard, and I started to say frantically, maybe I mean frantically, to record our own versions, to balance the scales. Do you have a sense of the next step when that information is out in public and recorded?
Well, we've got a ways to go to get it out, don't we? And I thought when I wrote Flying that there'd be just whole spates. Everybody'd write their book and I'd get to read theirs. And I wait and I wait and I wait. They're still in somebody's typewriter, I guess.
But fine.
Good. Get on with it. Because I have this voracious curiosity. And also because it's kind of hard to be out there getting all these pot shots, you know. I mean, it's so easy for these people to call you pornographic or self-indulgent or what other thing they're going to do to you. And if you're one of the very few people representing this kind of writing, you're taking all this abuse. I wish I could say, oh, well, we of the thing school. On the other hand, lady feel, mister. That's very difficult. So I was hoping for company. But I find that after 2 books of doing this kind of personal exploration, and I want to sort of go back into the ring again and take on, you know, the other, the problem, the real pressure from outside, it going way, way back and so forth to childhood fears. And then I think when I done the thought, maybe I will write autobiography again more in my serene middle age. I don't know what I think after, and the political, that's just sort of how my writing went, but in a political way I think perhaps we sort of recapitulate this after we analyze and express and so forth. We really do have to get up and go and do it, go and change everything. I mean, we can analyze this thing till hell freezes over.
Oh, just
but
that
action,
just get up and
well, yeah,
it.
I mean, action, in some sense, re-engaging with all the forces of patriarchy or oppression or whatever they are. I think that it's very much time for us to be at some sort of barricade again and to do things. Lots is being done, I realize, you know. But perhaps to take on a sort of a political aspect as we had before. And, because only, I mean, you only really finally exorcise the whole thing sure, you can write a book about it, and that gets it off your chest, but it seems to me that you finally only really exorcise a thing by activity, by really changing it, by having some effect upon actual circumstances.
Of course, there's a circular thing there, too, because...
Oh, yeah, we have to go back and forth for fuel.
And because I think the cycles of getting the information out and learning it has an effect on us immediately, too, so that we live our lives different, I think.
Not sure. I sure hope we do, huh? Yeah, don't we already, though? So much differently. I mean, I can remember when, being a very advanced age, I can remember when all the even premises of what we say were just unheard of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was a suburban housewife when I read Sexual Politics. I mean, it's very vivid to me about living our lives differently.
We've only got, I think, about 5 minutes left.
We actually covered infinitely more ground than I was suspected we would.
That was the question I was going to ask you. Was there anything else that you wanted to say about your work that you feel we didn't get to?
Yeah, well, all we did was talk about books, and that's just part of what I do.
It's hard to talk, however, about things like sculpture on a radio.
I don't know.
It's always hard for me because it's hard for me both as a broadcaster and a listener. Because I find that hearing verbal descriptions of things, for example, is just not enough to, you know, it leaves so many needs unsatisfied that...
Well, and then let's to like curiosity. I'm showing drawings uptown now that are erotic art for women buying about them and so forth. I don't know how many of these words we're going to get by with on the radio, but at any rate, the female genitalia this weekend.
Do. Yes.
This is a really forbidden subject, you know. In the visual arts, too, far more terrifying perhaps there. But they're tremendous fun to draw, and they're very beautiful, and one can do them as lovingly as you can describe a woman's body that you love. So I didn't see to. And to me, it's all, you know, one thing, to be able to describe that verbally or with brush stroke. They're all part of the same hedonism. And I've been very involved lately in the women's art movement. I was in Los Angeles doing a show out there of erotic drawings, and also of big, huge, enormous fat women, just so big. They're 9 feet tall, about 7 or 8 feet wide. They are so fat, you can't imagine it. They aren't just obese, you know, they're powerful, like great Amazon creatures marching around with shopping baskets and sitting on toilets and talking on the telephone while lying on the sofa and so on. And they're funny. And I had a marvelous experience there of, you know, I just had 10 weeks to do that show. And I just have to kill myself and never sleep at all. But even if I did that, I couldn't get through, I discovered. So I put a little sign on the door, said volunteers urgently needed. And women came, and they helped me, and we worked together, and we got ourselves a refrigerator, and we had 6-packs and cream for our coffee, and we hung around drinking wine after work, and we had the most beautiful time. And to work this way, you know, as a team, suddenly it's all easy. Sculpture is just merciless art. But it was delightful, and there's, you know, always somebody who's got a car can go and get the plexiglass, you know. And everything became so much simpler and more possible, and I realized the scale I could work on. I've been a sculptor 18 years, and, you know, you get to the point you wonder if you can do it anymore. Because I always work real, real big. The cages were as big as rooms, you know. And this would be terrific to go on working this way. This is what I want to do with my farm. I got a farm upstate that I never really did much with. And it's not really a farm, it's a bunch of barns and an old house. And I kind of put it together. It was falling down. I got real cheap and all that. So I would like to make this sort of a center to make big, big exhibitions. And women can come and work with me, and we'll have a refrigerator, and we'll hang out. And I would also like to make a lot of graphics there. Because in order to get art to women, we got to make it cheap, but we also have got to, you know, re-educate. Even the middle class don't buy art in America. It belongs to the rich people still, almost exclusively. So, but it's terrible for women not to be having art. And I talked a long time with us about this with Judy Chicago, and we think that if we can do graphics and make them cheap enough, we can create a whole, you know, collectorship, you know, the people mm-hmm. who buy our books, in other words, so that women artists could be supported by women, backed up by them, appreciated by them, given a tradition and an audience by women. And it's a real, you know, it's a tremendously hedonistic act to buy yourself a picture, because pictures are just sheer fun. Mm-hmm. It isn't going to cover a crack in the wall, you know. And we'll buy handbags, you know, that's part of the uniform. But we want to, and I would like to do that kind of graphics up there, too. Because I want to change the whole relationship of women to the visual arts, you know. And it's easy enough with books, but we have to go, you know, into printing in the visual arts, and then we can do the same thing. Anyway, I've got some of these graphics at Underwaters on 78th Street in Madison, and also my erotic drawings. And so we can't describe them on the radio, because some of the words we can't use either.
Yes, you can, as long as they're Latin.
Oh, yes, well.
You have to use, you can describe anything as long as it has a Latin or Greek.
Well, all
root.
Right. And then, let's see, genitalia, vagina, you can say, buttocks, I'll bet you can say.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an erotic topic. Very nice posteriors. And pubic hair, yeah, you can say that. Navels, you can say that. Clitoris is...
Yes.
Clitori. Clitori, anyway. All these things you can say on the radio. But you can't see them, so...
How long will the exhibit be there for people who want to see them?
Till June 18th, and maybe a week beyond that. And all the other things are way out in Los Angeles, so you'd have to be, you know, on the road or something. But if you do... go to Los Angeles, go to the Women's Building, because it's really right now the center of women's art in the United States and the whole women's art movement, which is a terrific force that's really going to be very powerful in our lives, I think.
Yeah, I wish I could afford more of it.
We're trying to make it as cheap as we can. We spend a lot of money doing that. But anyway, we have posters for $2. Now there you go.
And Andre Waters.
Yeah, yeah. 78th Street in Madison. Beautiful posters. Very carefully done on the best possible paper. You see, you really can make things very cheap if you try hard.
These, the posters of the drawings you were talking about,
yeah,
the erotic
yeah.
stuff. Well, even we can afford something like that.
Thank you, Kate Millett, for being with us. This is Viv Sutherland, and Judy Pasternak and I have been talking with Kate Millett about Sita, her new book, which is just out, and some other things.
That's my drawing on the cover of Sita.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the ones from this.
We made a silkscreen of that, but we don't have any more left. Trouble with limited editions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My sisters, a long way.
listening to The Velvet Sledgehammer, a production of the WBAI Women's Department. Listen in 2 weeks for another edition of The Velvet Sledgehammer at the same time. And this week, on Tuesday at 4 p.m., to More Than Half the World with Judy Pasternak. This Tuesday at 9 p.m., to The Real Live Lesbian Show with Carmen Garcia and Rebecca Tron. And this week on Wednesday at 9 p.m. to Women's Studies with yours truly, Viv Sutherland. Thanks for listening.